On our last tape, that part of the segment about you talking to Hubert Humphrey, going to dinner with him, you know. So, you were saying that Lou was working in Tulare,
mm-hmm.
and that was at North, and what was he doing there?
Well, he was city engineer of Tulare, while I was postmaster in Alhambra,
mm-hmm.
and he came home almost every weekend, came on the train then, and it isn't the first time we've been separated while on account of his work, because during the war he worked for the Second World War. He was at the United States Engineering Department, and he was at Camp Hawn,
mm-hmm.
which was a camp near March Field in mm-hmm. Riverside, and he came home every weekend from there. He wasn't a bit well for quite a long while, and they got a new, the city manager of Tulare was fired, and then the new city manager had a friend that he wanted for city engineer, so Lou was let out, and when he came home he had awfully high blood pressure, and he was dieting and doctoring, and he lost a lot of weight, but the doctor just seemed to be treating him for high blood pressure, and he never did get over the high blood pressure. He'd bring it down, but it seemed as though he'd come up, and he was so discouraged because he just loved it over there near Riverside, and he took an exam for head engineer or whatever they called it for March Field,
mm-hmm.
and it would be it wouldn't be for a new project or like Camp Hawn was, just to build up for the war. It would be absolutely permanent, and he was so happy because he passed first on the list in both the oral and the written, and then he had to take a physical, and he didn't pass it. His blood pressure was so high. Then they gave him an extension of time even to see if he couldn't bring it down just enough to pass the exam, but he didn't. So Long Beach at that time was expanding their school system, and had advertised, so he come down here and took the civil service exam.
And what year
is it? 50, in the late 50s.
Uh-huh.
And so he passed again first on the list. Maybe this was in 51, and got past the oral, and had the job if he could pass the physical. And I remember the day he came down here, I was at an all-day meeting at Tom and Washaw's home, and I was, just terribly nervous because I was thinking about him all the time taking the exam. So that's when I called up the Board of Education here and asked what the doctor's name was that gave the exam. And I think it was a school board doctor, but I don't remember. Anyway, she told me. And I called up the doctor, and I had a hassle trying to get through to him because the nurse there always very protective of doctors. And she kept saying, well, what's the message? I'll give him the message. He's very busy. And so anyway, he finally came to the phone, and so I told him I was Mrs. Remley. And, he said, Mr. Remley's in the waiting room. I'll call him in. I said, no, I didn't want to talk to him. I wanted to talk to you. And I told him that my husband was allergic to doctors. And I said, every time he saw one, his blood pressure went out of sight. So I said, for goodness sake, don't scare him to death, because otherwise he'll break your instrument. So anyway, he laughed, and he'd come up to, when Lou was next, he said, I guess he must have taken it, and it just shot way up. He says, I'm not going to bite you. He says, go over there and lay down. He told him a couple of jokes, and he called in somebody else. Then when he came to Lou, he gave him, took his blood pressure. It's perfectly normal. So I think that Lou had, they called it hypertension. He just nerves that his blood pressure would shoot up when he got frightened or something. But
how long had he been out of work?
He'd been out of work over a year
at that
time.
So he was very anxious about it.
Oh, yes, he was so anxious because he just felt terrible. He just, because Lou was awfully funny because he never would let me intercede for him or know anyone. He just was so stubborn that way that, you know, some people just go against their own interests all the time because he just wouldn't do it. He'd rather starve than to get any job through any pull or anything. Mm-hmm. So,
did you have opportunities where you could have helped him?
Well, I didn't know whether I did or not,
mm-hmm.
but I can remember I never tried, but I know once in Alhambra there was a lady that had moved from Pittsburgh, and she owned big apartment houses, and she worked a little bit in the campaign. Then after the election, she came over to see me, and she said, she had company out from Pittsburgh, and she said, you've got to get me passes to go through the studios, and she said, you know Jimmy Roosevelt, he's state chairman, and he can get them. And I said, why, for goodness sake, I never would ask him for anything. And she says, he wouldn't do it. And she just raved and carried on. She said, don't let me, I said, in Pittsburgh, anybody that had your job as chairman of the state committee for congressional district, there's about 300 jobs that nobody could get unless they had your signature. And I said, well, I couldn't get myself a job. And so anyway, she carried on so that I did call up Jimmy. And I felt so silly because that's when television was just first new, and oh, they kept everybody out. They were all on sound stages, almost behind. They were so, I guess they're on sound stages now, but they were so careful of any outside noise, and they only let ambassadors or some great people like that through. But anyway, when
she
I...
She wanted to go into a TV studio?
Yes, and out at... so anyway, I asked him, and so he said, sure, and... Dory Sherry was a big shot then in Democratic politics, as well as some big shot in NGM, I think. But anyway, he immediately sent me passes, and I'd like to have used them myself, but I gave them to Mrs. Lawler. So I did have some pull once. But when Lou came down here, I thought he'd drive back and forth to Alhambra, but... he did it for a while, and he decided that that wasn't for him, and I had to move down here. And so I just wasn't the least bit interested in moving down here. And Edgar was married, and Noel worked he was night manager at a big clock drive-in at Bell, and it was just about halfway between here and Alhambra. Mm-hmm. And Joe was first year high, and he was going to Cantwell Catholic High near Montebello. But in the second semester, Lou persuaded Joe to come down here and go to St. Anthony's. So then I had to come down. Mm-hmm. And oh my, I hated it. But
you had all of these friends that you had built up from quite a while and working in the...
Oh, I was in Alhambra 18 years. Mm-hmm. And I just figured I was going to live and die there, because when the kids started the school, I stopped moving. Mm-hmm. And made Lou do the trotting. But anyway... So anyway, I had to come down, so I did, and Noel got we didn't have room for him, because we had an apartment just about this big, only had no bedroom from mm-hmm. the kitchen, and we had a wall bed in the living room, and a wall bed in the dining room, mm-hmm. and it's still there, the big mansion apartments at First and Alameda's, and so Noel got a room at a big old home around on Ocean Boulevard. And so he got acquainted with the landlady there, and she was so sweet, a Mrs. Marshall that lived upstairs and rented a lot of rooms upstairs, and we rented the downstairs, which had two bedrooms plus a big living room and dining room, a great big kitchen, and a great big porch that went around on two sides, all glassed in. And oh, I just love it. A lot of fussy, it's an old Victorian home. Mm-hmm. And I'm awfully sorry I didn't buy it from her, because she... was for sale for $25,000 then, and it had went clear back. It had a great big garages in the back, and a big arbor, and a lot of grass. And at that time, we had such a wonderful big old dog, Roxy, and I couldn't bring her down to Long Beach at all. I had a friend in Arcadia kept her, but Mrs. Marshall was so sweet. So finally, I told her that Joe would take care of her yard if she let me have Roxy. So she couldn't resist that, so I had Roxy with me.
So you're able to bring your dog back from Arcadia?
Yeah, again. I was so happy to have Roxy. Because the lady there, she had a lot of animals, and she had to keep Roxy on the chain, because Roxy was so sweet, but she didn't want her to like her dog. You know, she thought she came first in her affection, and So she said that wasn't fair to her. Well, anyway, she was awfully nice to keep her for when she did. But so then I had my dog back again, and that made me happy. And I know I told you before, Joe was quite chagrined. He says, "Mother, how old do I have to get before you quit volunteering my time?" Because
you said he would do the lawn. Or?
Yeah, but he kept the lawn, and Mrs. Marshall was very happy, and I kept the dog from barking when anybody came in late at night. Upstairs. And
so there were other rooms?
Oh, upstairs. She had the whole, all, she had one room sort of made into a little apartment, and all the other rooms were, oh, she had about four or five rooms. It's an enormous big old house, great big rooms, rented. And, but they came in, and we never had anything to do with them. They came in another door.
So you had the whole downstairs?
We had the whole downstairs. And so, anyway, we lived there a year, but, I decided then that we ought to buy a place, and because I hadn't paid rent since we moved to Alhambra, and so we looked and looked and looked, and oh my, I wish we'd have bought the bargains. We had enough money to buy all the bargains we found then. We could have bought a nice home in Belmont Shore for $10,000. And Lou wanted to go out to Lakewood, but I said, oh, no, we've got our old home in Alhambra for our kids, and so if we buy anything now, it ought to be a income property. We still have it there in Alhambra. I still rent it. So we looked and looked and looked, and I found one at 1049 East 2nd. It went from Broadway through the 2nd, and that was an awfully good buy, and sometimes I wish we'd have bought that, but Lou didn't want to. We thought this was better because he said he'd rather live out this way. So we bought this. It was in an estate, and we bid on it. He had to put in a bid in the court. I thought every bid would go up, it'd be 500, then 750, then the next 1,000, and then so I bid 18,000 $260, and somebody else had bid $18,250. So I got it
by $10.
Isn't that something? And that was in '51. Just how cheap it was then, and now they reassessed it at $89,000. Isn't that crazy? Why, it's the craziest thing on earth. And we had to. It hadn't been. Kept up much. It had a real heavy, thick, white mastic paint on the outside. There was, it was a blitzkrieg of this mastic paint. There was thick, gummy stuff, and it looked awfully good, but it was beginning to crumble, and the inside hadn't been touched, and we had a great big gap in the plaster and the steps coming up from the earthquake. It hadn't been really done over much from the earthquake.
The earthquake was in
1933. And this was 1951. And so anyway,
was Long Beach at the time, was there a lot of development in Long Beach? Was it a very
no? The prices hadn't begun to go up here like it did had in Alhambra at that time. But right after that, they did all the bargains I could have gotten then, because we really did a lot of looking. But
so you had to, but for this place, you got it for not much, but there was a lot of return.
But I knew an awfully nice old fella in Alhambra, Mr. Morgan, and he came down and he fixed all the plaster, all the cracks he put in, and we repainted everything, redone the hardwood floors, and I worked right along with him. I just come down here every day. We worked all day long. I was just, we had to take off about 20 layers of wallpaper. You just never dream about all the wallpaper we took off.
So this this place here, did you pretty much make the decision? I mean, you said you put in the bid. Did you? You and Lou go out looking together, and then you found this one?
Yeah, we found it together.
But he
wasn't sold on an income property.
Uh-huh.
But I figured that's the only thing we could do, because it's been a very, because we've never charged much trouble. We've never had a vacancy. And everybody that was in it when we had to put the lady out that was here, and everybody else that was in it then and stayed here till they died.
Mm-hmm.
And but I could manage somebody else's place a lot better than I could my own, I think.
Really? Why is
it? Well, I don't know. I hate to. I just hate. We had a blind lady downstairs. Mrs. Hill was here when we, and she just left last year.
Mm-hmm.
And all those years, I never did raise her rent, which was so silly, because I just thought that she couldn't pay it, and she was so nice, and we had to go in and repay it. She never asked for anything,
mm-hmm.
and but and it has we've practically gotten free rent. We never made a cent of money, but it's kept paid the taxes and maintained itself till now. The taxes have gone up, so it doesn't. But it always did for all the time until this last year.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I delved right into politics and when I got here. And shall I tell that story again about Hosmer?
Sure.
Well, I went down to the Democratic headquarters on Broadway, and Ray Simpson was the congressional candidate. And he had just stacks and stacks of the nicest booklets, that the only campaign literature he had. And Lucille Toll was in the headquarters, so I took a whole group, a whole bunch of them, started out and got a precinct downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And on Pacific, I met a good-looking fellow, and I said, election day's a week from today. I said, vote for Ray Simpson for Congress. This was in the primary. And he looked at me, and he says, say, you've got a nice approach. How much is Ray paying you? And I said, well, you know, Mr. Hosmer,
I recognized
the night before I'd seen him on TV in a little spot ad, and I says, you know, I work for love, not money. And I looked at him, so, and he blushed, the purple clear up to his head, and I'd never even met Ray Simpson at the time, but I got a big kick out of that. But it's a funny thing, Hosmer had always been, he did the nicest thing for me. When any president dies, it seems as though that all the senators or congressmen make some speech about him, and all these speeches are put in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And each congressman and senator are given so many, and so he decided that his Republican friends wouldn't want the. I think it went on Truman, and I was so happy, and he sent it to me, and he asked me if I knew of some good working Democrats that would like it. And I thought that was awfully nice of him.
It was a speech about Truman when Truman died that Hosmer made.
Well, no, it was every member of the Senate, and it was they're just great, and I, you can set that off here, I'll find it.
Okay.
This is when Johnson died. I don't think, everybody in the memorial in the Senate makes a speech,
mm-hmm.
Symington, Ullman, Wilder, or they turn in a speech and they publish a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was awfully nice.
So Hosmer sent these to you.
Well, he did. I mean, not always, but I thought that was. And I thought that was real nice of him, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the reason, I mean, the Hosmer's voting record was just, for a Democrat, it was terrible, but he had such good public relations.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever wrote to him for anything that he didn't answer right away, and that's why it was just so hard to defeat him, because if he'd done something real good for you, you weren't going to...
Hosmer had good public relations.
Nobody could defeat Hosmer here. And that's, we had a string of congressional candidates that were really such poor caliber, because nobody with any really would run, because it would be just an invitation to defeat. And that's the only way we got in Hannaford, is because Hosmer didn't run again.
Mm-hmm.
We never could have defeated him.
Now, Hosmer Was he a Democrat? Or
no, he's a Republican.
I thought he was Republican. I thought earlier you had said something like, so his voting record, he did vote with the Republicans.
Oh, yes, and he voted, he didn't vote with the liberal Republicans. He was most, he wasn't very bright either, but he really must have had a terrific office staff that followed through on every request that was ever, and everybody that, because he was congressman so long, and anybody that wanted anything wrote to Hosmer, and they always got it. He just would work with them on anything, any of their problems, and so that's the reason that he was, of course, he had the complete support of the Press-Telegram. But we put on so many, many registration drives, and the Democratic registration was going up and up and up, but it didn't affect Hosmer. But that first time when Hosmer ran, Grant ran against him. And
this is William Grant?
Bill Grant, yeah. And he was the assemblyman from this half of the town. And so then... Hosmer won the Republican, and Grant won, it was cross-filing, and Grant won the Democratic one. So Simpson didn't even make the ticket. And that meant that the Democratic State Committee had to appoint somebody. And old Harry Wade was on the county committee here, and he was the brother of our mayor Wade here for years and years and years and years and years, and I just couldn't stand Harry. The mayor was a Republican, but Harry was supposed to be a Democrat, and I was on the county committee when I moved down here, and I didn't have to resign because all over the county committee you had to, if you lived in the county, they said you were still could be on.
So
but
you didn't have to be from a certain district?
No, well, I think it's better to be, you're elected from a certain district. But they didn't want me to resign anyway, so, but Harry would pick me up and take me into L.A. to the county committee meetings, and so on the way home once, he said, well, I'm going to be your next congressman. He said, I've polled all the executive committee members, and I have the majority, and they're all going to vote for me. And so, anyway, I didn't tell him that it wasn't the old state committee. It would be the new state committee that would vote. And, oh, did I work hard when I was up there to get it for Kinnick. And so Kinnick was, they voted Kinnick in.
Did you mention something about this in the last time? Is this where you were up calling people?
Yes. I went to the hotel and got them out of bed at night and banged and told them to vote for Kinnick. And
was Wade ever aware how
I don't know whether he was or not, but I sure did work for Kinnick because I just couldn't stand old Harry Wade, but he wasn't that bad, but anyway, Kinnick got it.
How long have you been on the, you're on the state committee now also, right?
I was on the state committee in my old district for years and years and years. I was appointed by Jerry Voorhees and appointed by Richard Richards. And I appointed by our assembly candidates there, Hugo Norin, and so I was on for about 12 years there, and then I was on here, I've only been not on about 4 years since I've been here.
What is it, as far as you know, okay, with Jerry Voorhees, I know you were very active in his campaign.
Oh.
Is that what determines... Which person they choose, or
the nominees choose the state committee, and they at that time they chose one other of their sex and two of the opposite sex.
Each, but of all the women who are working on their campaign, how do you suppose the decision came down to you? Was it just
I don't know. I put on a great big picnic in Alhambra. We get 2,000 and 3,000 people out every summer for Jerry, and of course he had such a big district, the old 12th, that went from L.A. border care to take in Claremont, and it took in Monrovia and took in Whittier, and then it was divided after it's not hardly the same district now at all. The lines are entirely different, but after a while, of course the Democrats at that time had such a few incumbents that the incumbents couldn't control the state committee because there were more nominees of the party than there were incumbents. So they gave the incumbents more more appointees because it got so that the districts were out of the hands of the incumbents, and that is what this last conference they had, that the county committee got to figuring that they're being left out. It's all the state committee, and this was to try to combine the state and county committees. And they said, but it has to be certified or voted upon by the assembly. And I don't think they're ever going to give away their power.
So the incumbents, as it is now, and from what you're saying, the state was really pretty much the same then. The incumbents hold the power.
Yes.
For the state committee.
And now they do, and they're not going to turn it over to. I don't think they will. I don't think this was called a reform measure, and I don't think they will. I don't. I just got back the whole synopsis of everything voted on and decided at this last conference, and I don't. They were so sure that they're going to reform the state committee. I don't care if it. I think that the people that work ought to have some say about it. And
I does it usually end up being the people who work that?
Well, the county committee is supposed to be the state committee makes the policy, and the county committee carries it out. But that's the reason that the council movement with the delegates from the clubs got such a big start, is because neither the county or state committee, they were just dormant, neither one of them did anything. So this council movement is what made us what elected
so
our Democrats
with the CDC and then the assembly.
They gave this, they turned the state Democratic in 1958. They just turned the whole thing around. We never could have gotten in without them.
So you feel that it was the club movement pretty much that did that. Do you think the end of cross-filing?
Oh, yes. That was one of the hardest things we ever did. It had more times that we got more petitions signed, and but there was always some legal maneuvering and it, mistakes made. But it was old John B. Elliott, who was one of our old-time conservatives, an oil man, that finally put up the money to finance a real, he had it all proper and everything, and we finally got it on the ballot.
So before John Elliott had done that work, there wasn't much of a chance of cross-filing?
Well, there wasn't much of a chance getting over it, getting rid of it. And of course, it just, that was through the long Warren years here, that Warren was... people liked him, and he didn't. He was a nice fellow, very, very fine person, and he just got elected. And all those years, the only Democrat we elected statewide was Edmund G. Brown. And we tried and tried and tried and tried and tried, but we just couldn't do it. But getting rid of cross-filing, the Democrats had to vote Democratic in the primary because they'd never heard of the Democratic candidate's name. Then they'd hear the Republican, and it was just a name familiar, and people don't pay too much attention to politics
anyway.
So there
was no, also I guess the party insignia wasn't yet on the ballot.
Yes, at first they got the insignia on, the Democrats, and they identified them, DEM and REP. But that, until we really got rid of cross-filing, we didn't elect many Democrats.
REP might be representative.
But